Hello, sports fans, and welcome to another edition of Yesterday Sports on the Sports History Network. And make sure to check out sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways. I have two signed books I'm giving away. One is titled No Nonsense, Old School Weight Training, and the other is Reliving 1970s Old School Football.
Our friend historian and author Tim Brown has some very unique and historic events and aspects of football history that really enjoy. But this one that came up for our topic today is a formation that I had never seen or heard of before, and it's really quite interesting. Tim's got the scoop coming up with the football archaeology in just a moment.
This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. Your host, Darren Hayes, is podcasting from America's North Shore to bring you the memories of the gridiron one day at a time. So as we come out of the tunnel of the Sports History Network, let's take the field and go no huddle through the portal of positive gridiron history with PigskinDispatch.com.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at SportsHistoryNetwork.com.
Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com. Welcome once again to the Pigpen, your portal to positive football history. And we have a Tuesday, and once again, we are going to go down the road of football archaeology with Timothy P. Brown of that website. Tim Brown, welcome back to the Pigpen.
Hey, Darren. Thanks for having me back. Look forward to having a little chat.
Yeah, so I think it's going to be a pretty interesting chat. And this is going to probably be one where folks are going to want to go to your website, footballarchaeology.com, and go to your tidbit from September 27th of 2022. And because there's a very interesting picture that's sort of the forefront of this discussion tonight, and that's on the reverse center.
Yeah. Well, so here's, you know, one thing about this reverse center is it's, you know, football coaches, just like, you know, any business, probably, they're always looking for something new. They're always trying to find a way to, you know, just improve their process, do something more efficiently, or just trick somebody. And so, you know, one of the things that it's been kind of a dynamic in football, you know, forever, is the difference between, you know, an innovation or an oddity or exploiting a loophole, right? So when somebody does something new, and, you know, almost no matter what it is in the game, if it fits within the rules, okay, then, you know, the football world adapts by either saying, hey, that's a great idea, we're going to start doing it too, and, you know, others take it on, or they look at it and go, no, that's not the way we're supposed to play this game. And then they ban it, they change the rules and get rid of it. So, you know, anytime something new comes up, you don't know which one it's going to be, right? So you have stuff like huddling was new in the 20s. People didn't huddle before that, you know, a couple here and there. Two platoon football, icing the kicker, calling plays from the sideline, all those things were not part of the game at various points in time, but, you know, somebody came up with a cool idea and, you know, others bought into it. But you also have things like Bo Schembechler, who his Michigan teams kept getting beat in big games that were played on grass. So he decided he was going to, he had their equipment people put washers on the bottoms of shoes because the rule said you couldn't have, you know, spikes longer than a half inch. So he had him put washers on and then screw the spikes in so that they extended further, but they still were only half inch spikes, right? So then the next year, you know, the rulemakers caught on and changed the rule and said, you know, the end of the spike can't be more than half an inch from the bottom of the shoe, right? To get away from, you know, to stop people like Bo from doing things like that. So anyway, so, you know, I've had a couple different, you know, topics on the articles on the site. Like, we're going to talk reverse center tonight, but, you know, I've done one in the past on the reverse quarterback, the tower play, the 12th man on the field, you know, who was a coach rather than a player, it was a student coach rather than a player, you know, just all these kind of goofy little ideas. But so the reverse center, just to describe it, you know, to the listener, was, you know, if you just think about a center who's going up to snap the ball, just like normal, he approaches the line and, you know, facing the defense. Well, that's the norm, but in the reverse center, the center turns around, and instead of facing the defense, he's facing his backfield. And then he, you know, squats down, reaches between his legs and grabs the ball. And then he, you know, snaps it double underhanded. Right. And so, you know, you kind of go, well, that's stupid. But, you know, it first came up in like 1912, and then, you know, mostly what I wrote about was 1941 when Syracuse implemented the system. And the coach's thinking, and it was, you know, Ozzie Solom, he wanted to be able to pitch the ball or snap the ball to running backs who are, you know, further, you know, spread out. And he used what he called the Y formation. So there was a quarterback immediately behind the center. There was another, like a fullback type, immediately behind him. And then the two halfbacks were behind the tackle. So they were, you know, a little further spread. And so by snapping in the reverse center mode, the center could, you know, swing his arms to the right or to the left and get it to a halfback who, you know, at the snap was already heading, you know, starting their sweep. So just, you know, it enabled them to sweep, to send the ball at a, you know, wider arc. But he could also just put it, you know, give it right back to the quarterback. And then they thought at the time that the center facing away from the defense also gave the center the ability to pull, you know, more quickly. And so one of the interesting things about it is the line coach at Syracuse that year was a guy named Bud Wilkinson, who became a pretty famous, successful, you know, football coach. You know, so anyways, he had, you know, two pretty good football minds working on this thing. And, you know, they came up with this tactic, the reverse center. So, you know, there was early on, there was some contention about its legality early in 1941, but, you know, then, you know, some folks on the football committee said, hey, it works. It's within the rules, nothing wrong with it. We may not like it, but, you know, here it is. And so Syracuse had a pretty successful season. They went to Wisconsin to beat them when they weren't expected to. I think they ended up like 6-3, you know, something like that. However, at the end of the year, the football gods decided by the time they met in early January of 42, they had Pearl Harbor had occurred. And so they basically said, you know, we're going to make virtually no changes in the football rules kind of for the duration. But we will adjust some things here and there. One of their adjustments was they modified the rule to say that the seven men on the line of scrimmage have to be facing their opponent. And so with that, the reverse center died, never to be seen again.
And, you know, I'm sitting here thinking about when I first saw that, you know, first I laughed and I said, oh, this can't be right. And then I read your post on it. And then I started thinking from a defensive side. And I'm sitting here thinking, okay, you're explaining that Y formation, and a good portion of the snaps are either going to the quarterback or the fullback directly behind them. Well, I'm going to put somebody, you know, in a nose guard position, a zero technique, what we call them today, and I'm going to blow that guy up from his rear end, and he's going to go head first and blow that play up into the quarterback and fullback. So they better be pitching to the halfbacks every time on their you know, off tackle plays or whatever they're doing. So,
yeah. And, you know, I can't tell you exactly how they adjusted or how they, you know, how they managed that. But they did. and you know, it proved to be successful, and they won a couple of big games doing this reverse center. And but you know, again, the football god said this isn't football the way we intended it to be, and so it became an oddity rather than an innovation.
Well, you know, it's interesting when you were saying that about some of these innovations coming in that people haven't seen before. I know, at least in the high school rule book, at least from 6 years ago when I was still officiating, they had a rule near the beginning that was kind of a catch-all rule, which I thought was probably one of the most brilliant things they put in a rule book. It said that if anything happens that are not within explained in this rule book, it's at the referee's discretion to make a decision in the fairness of football, of a fair and level playing field, which, not exactly in those words, I forget how they are, but that's basically the gist of it. And I read that, I can remember as a young official coming, I'm like, oh, okay, there's so much stuff in here. Where are they people going to come up with stuff that's not in the rule book? Well, when I end up getting a white hat, well, it seemed to happen quite often. And one thing that comes to mind, at least in our area, quarterbacks at high school level were starting to go more and more in shotgun and go to more spread formations. So they had what was called, the foot kick or the stomp start, to kick a man in motion, where you see it's, we don't even blink at it today because it happens all the time in the pro level where, quarterback's back there in shotgun, he kicks his foot and the guy goes in motion. Well, back when they were first doing that, there was a big discussion, I know, in officiating circles. Hey, is this a false start? Should this be considered a false start? Or is this, part of not because a false start is anything that simulates action at the snap and the ball's not snapped. That's the basic definition of a false start. So this is an odd occurrence, but he's not really simulating action at the snap. So there's a lot of discussion there, and there were some inconsistencies. In particular, one team we had in our area from crew to crew, from referee to referee, how they were handling that. And we had to get our heads together real quick and decide what we were doing. But just some things like that happened. And, the reverse center is probably something like that.
Well, and that's one of the things when huddling first came in, it was just like you're saying, there were some referees that said, no, this is stalling and therefore we're going to penalize you. That was a 2 yard penalty at the time, but they penalized him, and others said, no, this is perfectly fine. As long as you get the ball, snapped in reasonable time, then we're good. So they had that same kind of discussion, but, just cause it was new, that whole issue of the referee having that discretion, I think one of the, I remember, coming across it, that being at least part of the conversation when, there's been a couple of times where some guy's running down the field out ahead of everybody and a fan or a player comes out on the field and tackles, right? And so then what do you do? Do you award the touchdown? Do you give them the ball at that spot? And so those kinds of just bizarre situations, they are, one of the reasons that they empowered the referee as they did, and they should.
Yeah. It's as an official, I learned though, because those are judgment calls, like what you just described, the kickstart, things like that, the reverse center, that's a judgment in whoever's officiating its view, if that's legal or not, and giving a fair or unfair advantage to one team over another. And that's when you would call a foul, but judgment is the toughest thing to call, a judgment call, because that's something where half of the people in the stands are going to like it. Half of them are not going to like it. Whereas we have things that are cut and dried, like an offsides or a false start or, things like that. Those are, that's just plain, that's a foul. It's, it's penalized. There's usually no question about it. There's no judgment in it at all. So.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Interesting. It's always interesting to get the kind of the viewpoint of a referee, right? Because not that many, there's a lot more people who've played the game and watched a lot of football than have been out there in the wearing a zebra shirt.
Yeah. Well, they're always looking everywhere for officials. So if somebody's interested, you'll contact your local high school chapter or, you know, your local school athletic directors, and they can for sure get you into a game of officiating, because it's a great way to look at the game, and you'll learn a lot of the game and see some things from the other side, so to speak. So it's a very interesting, at least from a rules take. So, Tim, why don't you take the time right now to share with listeners where they can find your tidbits, how they can get them in their email inbox or their Twitter each and every day?
Yeah. So, so number one, if you just, you know, if you want to check out some of the articles and the things that I write about, just go to footballarchaeology.com, and, you know, all the archives and everything's available on there. You know, I release a today's tidbit every day. And so if you want to make sure you get it every day, subscribe, and you'll get an email with the content sent to you. You know, at 7 o'clock Eastern every evening. And then you can also, you know, I post everything on Twitter as well. So, you know, I'm Football Archaeology on Twitter. So find me there if that's the way you'd prefer to consume. But you might miss some stories that way. So that's the problem. That's the danger.
Yeah, you don't want to do that. Don't want to do that. Subscribe. It's easy. So, it's very painless. So Tim, thank you very much. Keep up the great work of preserving football history and enlightening us on some of these great antiquities of the game. And because we sure enjoy them and love to talk to you about them. And we'd love to talk to you again next week.
Very good. Thank you again, sir. As always.
That's all the football history we have today, folks. Join us back tomorrow for more of your football history. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hey there, football fans. This is Ross, the host of the Pigskin Tales podcast. I just need a few moments of your time to talk about the host of the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, Darren Hayes. He's expanded the Pigpen to search out information on the history of all team sports. It's a quest to find out about the competitors, teams, and places chronicled throughout athletic history through the uniforms and gear the participants used and wore. And he is taking you, the listener, with him on this educational journey to preserve sports history on the Sports Jersey Dispatch, found here on the Sports History Network. His newest podcast, called Jersey Dispatch, is all based on the jerseys that all the greats used to wear. You can find Darren Hayes and the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, as well as Jersey Dispatch, on your favorite podcast provider multiple times each week. So remember that Darren Hayes, the host of the Pigskin Dispatch and Jersey Dispatch podcasts, is found right here on the Sports History Network.